During Memorial Day at Lowe's, shop household must-haves for less. Save $80 on a Charbroil Performance Series 4-Burner Grill to chef up something special. Plus, get up to 45% off select major appliances to keep things fresh. Our best lineup is here at Lowe's. Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 5/27. While supplies last. Selection varies by location. See Lowe's.com for details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on Silver Drive in Columbus.
Can I start by telling them that I accidentally took a 2-hour nap today and I'm kind of just, like, I'm not even really awake yet.
Sure. I think you just did.
Yeah. You got here. I set my alarm for whatever, like 40 minutes. And then I woke up like 2 hours later.
You know what you did though? You told me.
I set it for AM instead of PM.
There you go.
And like, I guess I needed the sleep because
I
woke up like the building was on fire.
That's great.
It was crazy.
Okay, great. You
I'm
feel
still
okay?
not even sure this is real. Is this a dream? You have to tell me if this is a dream.
It's very real.
Okay.
It's very
this
real.
Is happening.
This is very happening. Okay. You bet your life it is, Tori. I'm obsessed.
Hi, Jillian Bezzavalli.
Hello, Patrick Hines.
Sam, what are we telling them about?
Discord and YouTube.
Oh, Disky. Don't forget to join the Discord. Tell them what that is and how to do it.
It's a server.
Yeah.
It's a Discord server, and we have one. And there are all these different channels, and everyone's really nice, and we're talking about, like, the episodes, but there's also a channel for, like, dog pics, and there's also a channel about, like, music that you're listening to and whatever.
It's like the Facebook group, but, like, organized.
A little bit more organized. Everyone's very nice, very helpful. Like, a lot of people come in, and they're like, I've never done this. What do I do? And
people
just jump in there.
Welcome.
It's very, very kind. Yeah.
Also, we're on YouTube. We have almost 200,000 subscribers. Hi, YouTube fam.
Hi, everybody.
I gotta really strongly recommend, if you have not ever watched our YouTube, go watch the Lilith Fair episode on YouTube because we are levitating. I am levitating off the chair. It is the most animated I've ever been in an episode.
You're
and that's
very,
saying something.
Yeah. It was a gift for everybody, really.
It was so much. I cried twice.
Our last episode of the year.
Yeah. Our last bonus episode.
Bonus episode.
Yeah. What are we talking about today?
Okay, everyone, the Joe Kenda fans, whatever you call yourself, the Kendies, this is the man with no face. This is Joe Kenda, Homicide Hunter. So he has like 11,000 seasons of that show. That he has like 3 or 4 like full length documentaries. This is one of them. It's 90 minutes.
The male fan, or anybody who wants to, can we call ourselves the Kendalls?
Sure. Okay. I'm sure that's a thing.
All right, we're doing that then.
I don't know how I didn't think about it. Is it real? I have no idea.
I was good at what I did, but this case was so different. When you have no place to go in a murder case, it eats at you. What did we not see?
1988 DNA was just beginning to be a forensic tool.
He's still out there. That's why I don't sleep at night.
What kept this case alive was everyone involved knew the DNA was coming.
Well, my. That is what we've been waiting for.
Homicide Hunter, the man with no face. Wednesday, March 8th at 9 on ID.
This was a very good episode. Joe Kenda, I'd never heard of the guy.
I think that's so funny.
I know. Keith Morrison, he is not.
No, but there's a catchphrase here and he says it.
And he's interesting. There's a little bit of like 1980s misogyny waves.
Oh, 100%.
Weaved in and
there's
out.
Part of it where it's like, all right, Kenda, don't do me any favors. If you don't want to be here, I don't, you know.
No question.
Which is, I think, some people find as part of the charm.
He's got neighbors running out of their houses to get his autographs.
Let's get
into He's just trying to live, Jillian.
I know. He's retired Lieutenant Joe Kenda. He tells us a little bit about himself.
Yeah.
In 1988, I was a sergeant in homicide, the supervisor of the homicide unit. I was on TV a lot. The murder guy almost always is. I was good at what I did. There's no question about that. I was.
Joe Kenda's great at his job, no question. Just ask him, he'll tell ya.
I mean, we're pretty good at our jobs. Is it fine to just say it out loud? If I, as a Ken doll.
Yeah.
If my Kendi can say it out loud.
I say it all
loud.
The time. Like, I want people to say, we just covered this where someone was like, oh, yeah, this is what makes me a badass. More of that energy.
And there's just something about, like, an overconfident, like, middle, you know, later in life white guy being like, I was great. I'm great at everything.
Yeah, and whatever. So, June 5th, 1988, Joe Kenda is the most famous person in Colorado Springs.
Guy is just trying to live his life like a private citizen. He cannot walk to his car without the neighbors in their bathrobes running out of their homes to say good morning.
Yeah, the neighbors will not leave him alone. Saber, he's like, I'm just trying to get into my unmarked police car.
Yeah,
the Crown Vic is real inconspicuous, Joe.
Yeah, and you by yourself are also very inconspicuous.
Right. The neighbor runs out in his bathrobe. Kenda's like, fine, you can have an autograph.
I know.
But no, this person has this horrible tale to tell Joe, and he wants Joe's help. This person 100% got up early, parked himself by the window, waited for Joe to walk walk to his car. And yeah. Good, he needs help. Joe can help him, fine, but that's absolutely what happened.
I feel like this guy picked the right moment to ask for an autograph. Like, you wait until they're not with their family, you wait when they're not busy, and then you bother the famous, famous, famous celebrity Joe Kendall.
Well, he was like, autograph, schmautograph. Like, yeah. Something horrible happened that we never get back to, by the way, so don't even think about it.
Because Joe gets, he's so annoyed to having to be talking to his neighbor, and then, like, he's like, gotta call on the radio, gotta go, Sam.
He goes, I let him yammer for a minute horrible tragedy that happened. To be fair,
I promise you we like Joe Kendall.
I bet this happens to people like him all the time.
That's true.
Like, my therapist says he can't save everybody.
That's
but
true.
I'm sure people are like, I saw you solve that murder. Can you help me with this thing?
Yeah.
Like, all the time.
Would you say that he's like the Paula Cole of his neighborhood?
Sure. Of course. So then he's like, oh, a homicide came in. I'm the homicide guy. Like, gotta go. See ya. And off he goes, as mysteriously as he appeared. And we never hear about this neighbor or this horrible tragedy that happened to him ever again.
But we do hear lots more about Joe Kendall. I love that, like, he's the boss, which I think is important to say, because he's got everybody on his team to keep, like, they love a legend. They love building the legend of Joe Kendall. This guy's got a cigarette in both hands.
He smokes like a chimney.
You know Kendall's rolling down the street when you can see the hand out the window with the cigarette in the hand.
Yeah. So Lieutenant Brian Ritz tells us all about the smoking. Enter young Joe Kendall, not Carl Marino from PI Moms. He'd been canned at this point.
That wasn't him?
No.
I hated that guy the whole time for nothing?
For nothing.
Oh, man.
Yeah, no, you could have liked him.
Oh, because I was like, once again, not that hot.
No.
You know what I mean?
But now.
Yeah, now I think he's kind of cute.
There you go.
Oh, my God. So he was fired by this time.
Yeah, he was not doing it. He was not doing this. He was fired from, like, the series, the, like, 40-minute episode thing.
Got it.
So not Carl Marino.
Okay.
So they get to the scene. It's outside. It's an alleyway. And, like, as the story goes, some idiot girl reporter on the scene is like...
I remember getting out of the car, and the young reporter very disapprovingly said, "Oh, you smuck." And I looked at her, and I said, "Honey, if you did what I did for a living, you'd be smoking cigars, and you'd be inhaling them. Now get out of my way."
Now get out of my way.
This is where I was saying this guy.
Did I exaggerate?
No, it was perfect. And like Keith Morrison would never. You know what I mean? The whole calling her honey, I was like, oh my God. Kenda.
It's like we're in Dick Tracy now.
At the next Kendall meeting, we're gonna have to bring this up. You can't just go around calling women honey.
I know.
You know?
She was some idiot reporter. She was a little girl.
Can I say the recreation of the alley where this crime took place, if they're not in the actual alley, the set design team deserves an Oscar.
No, they go there.
Okay.
They go there.
It looks exactly like it, which I guess is because it is it.
Well, because Dan May is the district attorney, and he is the first person to be like, look, all cases haunt you, but this one in particular. And later on, he will go to that alleyway and like walk us through it.
But I mean in the recreation, like the flashback of them walking down the alley. Like it looks, either it's a green screen. Or they used it.
Maybe.
Like, I mean, I was honestly blown away by the level of detail.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, Kenda.
Is this my favorite show of all time?
Kenda had nothing
to do
with
this. Do I like
this
more than Will Ferrell?
Kenda was like, I'm going home. I'm not. You guys figure it out.
Fam, sorry, my voice is a little scratchy. It's been a long week.
It's time to find furniture that feels like the one. Shop Haverty's Memorial Day sale and save on furniture backed by a regret-free guarantee. Plus, explore fresh styles arriving just in time for summer. Visit Haverty's online or in-store in Columbus at Polaris.
This is where it gets really bad, everybody. Welcome to True Crime Obsessed. The victim was left in this very, very horrifying way. She was assaulted. She was raped. And she was left in what they call, quote, the rape position. So this piece of shit, like, wanted to also leave her body in a humiliating way.
Like, I mean, this poor woman has been, like, it was horrible what happened to her.
When you look at this girl, evidence of blunt trauma to the face, cuts, scratches, abrasions, sprawled on the ground, skirt hiked up, panties removed, and was obviously raped.
Her underwear removed and posed. So, like, this is not a thing that we see often in rape cases, but, like, this woman was posed to be found in a, quote, like, humiliated position by the cops.
Right. And so Stephanie Redfield is here. She's the deputy DA. She's, like, horrified by this as well.
She's
obviously.
Also not taking anybody's shit. I love her.
No.
Yeah.
So she's going through the original evidence photos and, like, this victim, we will learn her name in a minute. Her moccasins are thrown around, her earrings on the ground. There's blood everywhere, like her necklace, her bracelet, but also, most importantly, clumps of hair from the piece of shit who did this that was ripped out in the struggle.
Now, what I love about that, this is before DNA is well known. And so I love that she was just like ripping this man apart the best she could.
And
not even to like leave traces of him.
Right,
just because she was like a badass fighting for her life.
Bleached chemically treated hair. Now, this is great for one reason only, really, because it's a good way to eliminate a lot of people. Like, it's a really specific thing.
Kenda says most men don't dye their hair. I was like, somebody doesn't have a lot of gay friends.
Joe.
You know what I mean?
Joe,
come spend a weekend in Hell's Kitchen.
This was like a bad dye job.
Yeah.
It was just like bleached to shit dry as fuck hair.
Yeah.
So again, in 1988, we're told that DNA was scientific mumbo jumbo. That's a direct quote. They had no idea what it was or how valuable it could be, but still, even without that knowledge, I am shocked by this and very pleasantly amazed.
Yeah.
Everyone preserved the crime scene and all of the evidence with a lot of care and precision because they were like, we don't know about this DNA stuff, but this crime scene is all we have. We're going to take care of it.
And they vaguely understand that there's this new technology that's going to help. Like, they're kind of like, and you can tell that Kenda is kind of doesn't really buy
it. It's a fad.
But we'll try it if you say it's going to work.
Yeah. So they're at the scene. And someone runs up in a panic. This guy is a wreck. He runs under the police tape. His name is Bob Villalpando. And he's here with us today.
Because initially, like, Joe is looking down at the tape and watching these cops, like, manhandle this man that's trying to get into the crime scene. So Joe goes over to him. He's like, what's going on, girl? Like, what's happening?
The victim is his wife.
And he knows because he recognizes the socks.
Right. So her name is Mary Lynn Villalpando.
Yeah.
It is odd when someone shows up at a crime scene that is a family member. Rarely doesn't happen.
You know, this crime scene was kind of remote. How did he know where to go? What's he doing here? Is he involved?
How did Bob know she was even there? Like, it's very rare for a family member to show up to a scene like this. We're in kind of like a remote alleyway. The cops, they're immediately like, Bob, you're a walking red flag. What's going on?
In the moment, I'm on the cop's side. You know what I mean?
And like, Bob's having the worst day of his life times a million. And they're like, why don't you get thrown into this cop car and come downtown? And at first, Bob is like, oh, great, we're a team. And
I'm part
like,
of the team.
No, Bob.
No.
They think you're a walking red flag.
Yeah. And in fairness, he is like a crazy man trying to break into a crime scene and he's claiming that that woman is his wife. Like, how would you even know she was there?
And then there's this weird moment where Kenda's like, well, in our defense, this is what Bob looked like in 1988.
But they even show the picture to Bob and he's like, yeah, I get why they thought it was me. I'm like, you just look like a guy with
a
job.
Mustache.
You know what I mean? With like big hair, which frankly, I would kill for.
Is anyone going to say he's not white?
I know. Exactly.
But I was like, Bob, don't let them gaslight you.
Yeah.
Why does this make it look like you did
it? Well, this is way back in the day. Like, this is before everybody watches like true crime documentaries all day long. Like, he thinks that by talking, he's helping himself, which in this case, he actually is, but that almost is never the case.
Right. And on the other side of it, what do we do, everyone? We start close to the victim and work our way out. So obviously, we're going to talk to the husband.
I was thinking about this today. Like, if I ever were to come home and like Steve were dead, I would call the police. I'd be like, get down here, question me. I will have my lawyer eliminate me as soon as possible. I know you have to do that.
Yeah. So here's what Bob tells the cops. Mary Lynn is his wife. She's 24 years old. They have a 4-year-old daughter at that time named Coral. Ugh. And they live like just a few blocks away from the crime scene.
We lived on the west side all our lives. I knew Mary from kindergarten in grade school. That person was my reason for living, basically. I mean, that was my love.
She was my reason for living. That was my love.
Yeah, and we get, like, the story from the night before. So Bob says that, like, the night before, they'd gone to a wedding in Pueblo, dropped the daughter off with Mary Lynn's mom. They had a great time at the wedding. Happy to hear.
Even now, he smiles when he talks about how much fun they
wedding,
had.
Well, because I was also thinking, like, that was, like, his last good memory with her, you know?
God.
And, like, on the way back, like, his drunk brother and his brother's drunk wife are, like, in the car with them. And he's saying, like, rather than taking them home, I was, like, just taking them back to our place so he could, like, sleep it off. Because our daughter's with the grandma, so there's an empty room.
Yeah.
And so he takes his brother, his like drunk brother, into the house to show him where he's gonna sleep.
And also, we don't know these family dynamics with the brother, the sister-in-law. Like, we don't know what's going on because Mary Lynn is not happy.
Right. And so when he comes back out, Mary Lynn has jumped out of the car and she's running down the street. Now, poor Bob tries to chase her, but he can't because he's got a leg injury from work.
And they're like, really? Like, the cops are like, this is a hell of a story, Bob.
I mean, once again, it's on the cop side.
And today, he's like, no. Like, he tells us, he's like, I understand it doesn't sound very realistic, but he said,
she was very, very independent, very strong-headed. Wasn't out of the ordinary for her to clear her mind with a quick jaunt around the block. We were living in proximity to her parents. I had figured she was either going to check on Coral and she'd either be coming home with her or calling me from there.
instead of like fighting with my husband, I'm gonna cool off, cooler heads prevail. I'm taking a walk.
I wonder if everybody had fun at that wedding or just Bob. You know what I mean?
But we sounds like everyone had a grand old time.
Well, we learned too that her parents live in the neighborhood and that's where their daughter is staying. So she doesn't come home that night, and Bob just assumes that she goes to crash at her parents' house to like be with the kid.
Yeah.
And she'll be home in the morning. Like, these family dynamics are very normal. Mom, dad live down the block, They're watching my kid. I'm mad at my husband. I'm gonna go sleep it over there.
And Bob is like stressing to us today, like, hey, all you like true crime crazy people, like, I wasn't worried at all. I had no reason to be worried.
Yeah.
She knew this area inside and out. She was always going for walks. Like, it made
her parents
total...
were right there.
And she was kind of mad at me.
Yeah.
So like, it makes sense that she wasn't like, okay, I love you, bye. Like, whatever. They were, I don't want to make it like worse, but She was like, for him, he was like, well, obviously she probably wouldn't want to call me. It's late. I'm dealing with these drunk people. She's at her parents' house. Like, she had no reason to worry.
You should clear it with your person before you just invite your drunk brother and his wife to spend the night.
I mean, who knows?
You know what I mean?
Like, what are those dynamics?
I know.
So Bob wakes up, the sun is coming up, and Mary Lynn isn't home. And the first thing he does is go look for her. And I'm like, yes, Bob, right answer.
So I went down to her mom's, went inside, could tell right away that she wasn't there. I drove around and, well, there was sirens, you know, heard the commotion and came around to 27th Street where I could park the car and walked up onto the scene.
That's how he knows it's her. Like, oh my God, my wife didn't come home last night. I see her socks in the alley. This now tells me where she's been. And that's why he was acting so crazy at the crime scene. So it was a crazy story that he just like showed up there and was all upset. But it does make sense.
Yeah. Now, I believe Bob, but Joe Kenda and his Tommy gun don't.
He's going to need a little more information.
He's not comfortable yet, he says.
Yes, yeah.
So he's going to ask Bob the hard questions, which are questions that all husbands should be asked. So sorry to break it to you.
No, I agree.
Any history of violence? Have you ever hit Mary Lynn? Have you ever wanted to?
Yeah, he says no to everything, but they don't believe him. I'm like, what is it going to take for you to believe him?
And lest we forget, Bob's hair is jet black, not bleached.
Exactly.
The one piece of evidence we have does not match up with this guy.
Yeah.
And they're like, let's give him a polygraph. He's extremely truthful. I'm like, the polygraph did it, not the fact that he doesn't have bleached hair.
And the fact, too, that, like, this woman clearly fought for her life. There's not a scratch on this guy.
Yeah. Also, this is the most horrible day of this guy's fucking
exactly.
life.
Exactly. And he's just trying to do whatever he can to get them to check him off so they can go look for the... Because every minute we're sitting in the police station with this guy, the killer's out there.
We're wasting precious time.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
finally, Bob is cleared. And he's like, let's keep it moving. I agree.
Yeah.
And Bob says, also, now he is part of the team. Now he is working with them.
Yeah.
And he says...
Following up with Bob, we learn more about how she was dressed, what she had with her at the time. He's able to say that she's actually missing some items that we did not find at the scene.
Yeah, Mary Lynn had a jean jacket and her wedding rings, engagement rings.
Her jean jacket, her wedding ring, her engagement ring. He draws a picture. I always wonder why they ask people to do this for... I'm like, a ring is a ring, and unless you're like an actual artist, how do you draw a picture?
I couldn't draw my own ring.
Thank you.
I couldn't draw it.
I feel very
validated. If you ask me what shape the ring is, I couldn't tell you.
Because it's just going to be a circle with a couple of triangles on it, no matter what the ring is.
Like, is that horrible?
No.
That I don't know?
But also, like, are you an artist? You know what I mean?
No.
Yeah.
But I don't know what, like, the if it's a cut. Like, I don't know. I didn't care. It was an antique old ring. So
where'd it come from?
My mom had it. My grandmother had it. It was, like, an old, like, antique.
So your family gave it to Mike to give to you?
Yeah, I guess so.
Are we just learning your ring origin story together in real time?
But, like, I didn't... Some people are very, like, I want, like, you know, like, a princess cut or whatever.
Yeah.
Ask me to draw that. Gun to my head. I'm dead. Bye.
Princess cut.
I have no idea. But I know it's a certain shape. Like, I know some people are very particular, and if you can, great. But, like, I couldn't draw... Like, I would never in a million years, if I'm dead, expect Mike to be like, this is the worst fucking day of your life.
Yeah, yeah.
Now draw the ring.
Draw the ring. That's what I'm saying. Thank you for bringing it back. I don't know why. Like, what is the use of drawing the ring?
The worst thing
it's
that
a
has,
circle.
The worst thing that's ever happened to you just happened. Here's a pen and some paper.
Fucking draw it.
Like, what is this? A punishment?
Exactly.
I thought it was cleared. Anyway, but there are other things, like the jacket, like other she had very, very cool jewelry and like her moccasins are cool. So he's just drawing other details to help him out.
Yeah,
she had
like
super cool style.
Well, and Joe kind of telling us
robbery and sexual assault rarely go together. So then he began to wonder, could it have been a memento taken by the perpetrator as a way to relive the moment? Is that this?
So she was robbed in addition to being sexually assaulted. He's saying that doesn't usually go together. So were these mementos that he took to, like, as a way to relive the moment? And I just forgot that that was a thing that happens.
Fucking disgusting. The only one who's allowed to keep trophies is Dexter because he kills the bad guys.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
totally. Yeah.
Keep them in there. Air Shaft, in case you haven't watched Dexter 30 years later.
I know, I've never seen it, but it's one of those things I'm always like, is today the day I start Dexter?
It's a heavy lift, yeah. You know, and like, it's a commitment.
Yeah.
Season 3 is great.
Is that my alley, though?
I think so.
Yeah.
It's good. And Michael C. Hall is great.
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
Get a full body reset anywhere you go with Dr. Teal's Magnesium Spray. It's a concentrated magnesium blend of pure Epsom and Dead Sea salts, all bundled up in a convenient on-the-go bottle. A few quick sprays will relax your body and mind and keep you feeling recharged all day long. It's wellness you can feel, and you can find it in your local bath aisle. Dr. Teal's. Yep, you needed that.
It's time to find furniture that feels like the one. Shop Haverty's Memorial Day sale and save on furniture backed by a regret-free guarantee. Plus, explore fresh styles arriving just in time for summer. Visit Haverty's online or in-store in Columbus at Polaris.
So now we're going through the original autopsy, not with the people who went through it originally, but like, yes. It's just being explained to us by experts. And we learn Mary Lynn was fighting for her life.
Yeah.
No exaggeration. There are tons of defensive injuries. She was stabbed 3 times in the chest in the same place. They say 1, 2, 3.
But like the stab wounds weren't what killed her. The cause of death was a massive blunt head trauma to the head. And like we skipped this in the beginning, but there's a rock down the path from the alley. And the rock is covered in blood.
It was a very, very violent sexual assault. It was a very, very horrifyingly violent thing.
Yeah.
But this piece of shit left his DNA and he had no idea how valuable this would end up being.
And he did probably never even heard of DNA.
Great.
You know what I mean? Like,
great.
I mean, my God, they used to get away with murder, literally.
Great. Stephanie Redfield says,
the sexual assault was incredibly violent. The kind of person that does this is obviously someone very disturbed, someone who hates women with a passion. You're looking at an antisocial, evil person.
This guy is violent. He's evil. He hates women. And she says, like, he's not a suspect. He's a monster.
Yeah.
So Cynthia is here. She's Mary Lynn's sister.
Yeah. I love that Joe Kenda says that he doesn't like to outsource the telling of the family about a murder.
Yeah.
He does it himself. I thought that was pretty cool.
He's like, it's the worst part of the job.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel right to say, like, hey, kid, hey, Rook, you do it.
Yeah.
You know?
So he goes to see the family. We meet Sister Cynthia. And like, I mean, obviously, like she just says, like, we always hear this when you meet the family of a murder victim, like she was numb. She felt blown off the face of the earth. It was unreal. She's not over it to this day. How do you ever get over something like this?
Yeah. And she's going to tell us about Mary Lynn in a second. But this is where we get back with Dan May, who's the prosecutor.
Yeah.
He cannot even talk about it today.
Yeah.
What it was like being there. He is crying.
Yeah. It's almost 40 years later.
He excuses himself.
Yeah.
And I think that is so important. We very rarely see that.
Yeah.
This was the first time he was there when a family was notified. Like, this man has been carrying this case for 40, 50 years.
I mean, and the people who do these jobs, like, we owe them a debt when they do it well. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I mean, it's the kind of thing that, like, takes a huge toll on people.
So Mary Lynn was awesome. Cynthia tells us about her.
Mary Lynn was very independent. She did have a good, strong will. She wasn't materialistic at all. She was a free spirit. She enjoyed life. She liked Pink Floyd. I mean, you know, can't get much better than that.
Loved Pink Floyd. I'll never get it.
Yeah.
I'll never understand.
I don't really get it either.
No.
She was a free spirit, enjoyed life, super active. There's a picture of her with a very, very, very cute dog.
Yeah.
She was on the track team at school.
I never see it. I never even noticed
She's in a picture with a really sweet dog, like some kind of cattle dog or something.
Oh, my God. That's so funny.
But Bob continues. She was, like, amazing to get along with. Like, just so easy and lovely to be around.
I love knowing that Bob and Mary Lynn knew each other all through school, but they didn't start dating until after high school.
Yeah. And so then after getting married for a bit, Mary Lynn went to college for sports medicine.
And she had, like, ride her bike uphill both ways.
Yeah.
Like, she didn't have a car, and they were saying that, like, she would love school. She was so into it. She rode her bike in any kind of way. Like, she was really determined to, like, get a college degree and, like, better herself.
Yeah. And Bob's like, everything was great. They had Coral. He loved his family. He loved his life. Everything was coming up them.
Yeah.
And he said this thing that's, like, it's such a sweet way of saying it. He said, our future looked rather bright.
Yeah.
Like, broke my heart.
I know.
So June 7th, 1988, the cops are canvassing the neighborhood. And Kenda tells us about this thing he would do where he would make a map of every single window that had a view of the crime scene. And that's what he would want the team to focus on. Like, go talk to them because they had an angle here. They must have seen something.
So they find a 12-year-old girl named Cindy Hyatt. She's here
today. I couldn't believe it.
Did you notice the thing?
The what?
We're in her office. She has Blanche Devereaux wallpaper.
Oh, hell yes.
She's got that Martinique wallpaper from Blanche Devereaux's bedroom.
Love.
I was like, come on,
legendary.
Cindy Hyatt.
Legendary. I was not expecting Cindy to be here.
No.
I thought they were going to be like, unfortunately, it was a 12-year-old and she gave us no information. No, Cindy's here.
She's here and she like remembers it happening. She said she was staying with her sister and her sister's boyfriend at their apartment. Her bedroom had a window that overlooked an alley. It was a warm night. She had the window open. She was having a hard time sleeping.
What was about 3 o'clock in the morning, I heard a very brief, what sounded like a startled scream. There was no other follow-up. I heard nothing else.
No follow-up? I mean, how many of us hear this all the time?
Yeah, she said she was like, there was nothing else that came after it. She heard nothing else. And she was laying there uncomfortable. She was maybe drifting in and out of sleep. It was hot out.
You never think that you hear one startled scream, like you're not going to call the cops.
No, she was 12 years
old. Exactly.
So she didn't make anything of it. She went back to like trying to go to sleep in the heat, which is the absolute worst.
Mm-hmm.
And meanwhile, Kenda and co. are rounding up the usual suspects, which means men in the area with a history of rape and or violence. And they're walking among us.
So they identify one guy, a guy named Trenton Hayes. They tell us 24 hours after discovering the body, he was arrested for a DUI about a block away from the alley where Mary Lynn was found.
They show us the map.
Yeah.
I mean, spitting distance. No shit.
This is where we start to get the Kenda, Keith Morrison. Well, now, Mr. Hayes, who might you be?
Yeah. Very, very, very similar. Like, don't come for me, but they're similar. Like,
oh, they are.
Very similar.
100%. I mean, when you're Kenda, and you spend your nights, you know, 3 a.m. driving around looking for the bad guys, you're saying this to yourself.
Absolutely.
Like, he's been saying this into mirrors and, like, in alone in his car for decades.
Right. Absolutely.
Well, now, Miss Pensavalli, who might you be?
So, this idiot gets a fucking DUI. His truck is impounded. And they're like, well, we can't get a search warrant for the truck, but there's nothing that says we can't look inside the windows.
You know, bending a rule here and there.
You know
what? Kenda.
Ask for forgiveness, not permission, says Joe Kenda. So he's like, sends two of his guys to the impound lot to like peer in the windows and see what they can see. And they see some pretty incriminating shit.
I will agree.
They see a sheathed knife laying on top of a stonewashed jean jacket. Well, we happen to be missing a stonewashed jean jacket. And our victim has 3 stab wounds. That certainly adds up nicely. See how he can explain this away.
It's a stonewashed jean jacket, and I actually, on second viewing, made a mental note to add, every single person in 1980s America had those jackets.
It's 1988, yeah.
You know what I mean? Everybody
sure
had a stonewashed jean jacket. So it's a little bit less amazing of the jacket, because I think everybody had one.
Yeah.
But the jacket with the knife, you know, it's an interesting pairing.
Well, not just that. When they get eyes on Trent Hayes, he has bleach blonde hair. So, and there's more. So when they sit down with him, they're talking to him, and his shirt is open because it's missing buttons. And I'm like, someone fought for their fucking life, maybe?
Yes.
And there are scratch marks all over his chest and stomach. Remember, Mary Lynn fought like hell.
Yeah.
And on top of all that, his hand is bruised and swollen. And I'm like, we got him.
And now, the thing about it is, he says this bruise came during the arrest for the DUI. This guy fought the cops.
Wait, I'm like, I can buy that.
Yeah.
You know, like, but combined then, with, like, oh, he's like, oh, the cops roughed me up a little bit. I'm like, dude, I totally get that. But combined with everything else.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then we learn about his alibi. He says during the critical time of 2 a.m. to 3 a.m., he's asleep in his truck.
That's not an alibi.
But there's no one who can verify. I said, alibi or not, this is some hard living.
And this guy sucks.
He's like getting arrested, fighting cops. He's got scratches and bruises all over his body. His hands are all fucked up.
There's a jean jacket that is not his.
Yeah.
It's like a woman's jean jacket.
Yeah. Well, so they got to run this guy's DNA. It's 1988. They're saying, I thought this was so interesting.
1988, DNA was just beginning to be a forensic tool used to solve crime. It was still a comparison science. That was long before DNA databases were created.
At that time, the only thing you could do is, I've got this suspect. Well, let's take their DNA and compare it to the known DNA, whoever raped this woman.
It was still a comparison science, so there were no databases yet in 1988. So the only way to get somebody on DNA was to extract, like, a ton of blood, take hair from their pubic region and their hair, send it to the one lab in the country in Maryland where they were doing the work, and wait 3 weeks to get it back.
Cellmark Diagnostics was the only game in town.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Every Dunkin' Donuts, as much as I love them, turn every one of them into a lab.
Also, they do a reenactment of getting the saliva sample. This is like a Jane's Addiction video. If you know, you know.
Yeah.
I've never seen lips that close up in my life.
I know.
I was like, what is this?
Well, because now they do the swab, which seems so much more like a better way to do it.
But then we get like a close-up of the needle for the blood. Like,
I know.
Are we doing?
I know.
The lip close-up was so out of place for me.
I know. And they need a lot of blood for the DNA comparison.
Well, they take fucking everything. And guess what? It's not a match.
And that's why I'm saying, so this isn't the guy. But somehow still has cuts and bruises all over his body, like, scratches everywhere, shirts that don't button.
Just got a DUI. Like,
DUI, he sucks. Fought the cops. Like, this guy is living hard in Colorado City.
Oh my God.
Get a full body reset anywhere you go with Dr. Teal's Magnesium Spray. It's a concentrated magnesium blend of pure Epsom and Dead Sea salts, all bundled up in a convenient on-the-go bottle. A few quick sprays will relax your body and mind and keep you feeling recharged all day long. It's wellness you can feel, and you can find it in your local bath aisle. Dr. Teal's. Yep, you needed that.
It's time to find furniture that feels like the one. Shop Haverty's Memorial Day sale and save on furniture backed by a regret-free guarantee. Plus, explore fresh styles arriving just in time for summer. Visit Haverty's online or in-store in Columbus at Polaris.
But, like, how did Mary Lynn end up in this area specifically? Like, where would she... Was she going somewhere? She didn't go to her mom's house. So, like, what's open at 3 a.m. is the next question.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're checking out the local bars. Fred's.
These old, like, Colorado City bars look awesome.
Meadow muffins. You want to know what that is?
Yeah.
You think I didn't Google it?
Well, yeah.
It's cow poop. It's a meadow muffin.
Shut up. So is it still open?
That I don't know. I just Googled what is a meadow muffin because I knew it had to be something.
Uh-huh.
It's cow poop.
Uh-huh.
Thunder and Buttons.
So that would be us if we were an ice skating duo.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Buttons. Yeah, yeah. What?
I'm Thunder.
You are?
I mean, I'll be Buttons if you want.
What does that mean?
Thunder just means, like, I feel like to me, Thunder means, like, big and sort of unruly, and Buttons is, like, cute and adorable.
Oh.
I'll be Buttons.
I'm neither of those things. I'm neither Thunder nor Buttons, I don't think.
Oh.
I'm not cute and adorable.
Fam, I want to tell her about Fire and Ice, but she's not going to get it. If you know, you know.
Is this Modern Family?
Yeah.
Sorry. It's not.
I know.
I'm just not there yet.
Fire and Ice is like maybe my favorite gag on Modern Family.
Remember the conversation we just had about Dexter and how I handled it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know.
Okay.
We're not bullying you. We're just
really?
Loving. We're loving you from afar.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
It's feeling very up close and personal.
Anyway,
I'm
Thunder
like,
and Buttons.
Afar? Where?
Please welcome Thunder and Buttons.
I'm sure it's hysterical.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's
period. Okay. End of sentence.
Great.
But I'm sure it's hysterical. There's no caveat.
There's part of you that's not watching it on principle.
But here's the thing. Now I can't.
I know.
No, because now, no matter what opinion I have, it's going to be wrong.
Well, watch it secretly. Never tell me. Just enjoy it. That's all I want for you.
Okay, I will. The standout bar was Rogers.
Rogers Bar emerged because they served food after alcohol consumption closed at 2 a.m. So could she have been in there?
So that's what they did. They went to Rogers Bar and they were talking to the bartender there.
Because they stopped serving booze at 2 a.m., but they kept serving food later than that, and they'd be open till like 3 a.m.
And I'm not saying every bar in the world needs to serve food late, but I am saying there should be a special Academy Award for bars that do.
It feels...
You know what I mean?
It feels weird to like stop serving food, but to...
Keep serving booze. And like, I was a concierge in New York City for 5 years. The level of rage people who are visiting this town feel when we tell them there's nothing in the area after 11 p.m. serving food, that's a very real thing. Like, there are not a lot of places in New York City that are open late and serving food.
I guess maybe in that area necessarily, but like the whole thing is like you can get anything at any time.
Not true. I mean, as a concierge in New York, I remember like there were like I could list like 5 or 6 places you could travel to get food at like 11:30, 12 o'clock.
Were they not happy with the caliber of food?
No, it wasn't that.
Okay.
It was the expectation that you can get anything. It's New York. You can get anything anytime. I'm like, I don't make the rules. I'm just the messenger.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
So the bartender says to the cops, she saw a woman that night. She's not sure if it was Mary Lynn, but that woman left out of the back exit, which like leads to the alleyway in question.
Yeah.
And on top of that, she's like, oh, also, there was a guy in here who I'd never seen before.
He was obviously intoxicated and was very belligerent to everybody. And, got to the point where he stood up and he just walked out the back door, didn't pay for it, and he just left. She said she remembered him very well because he had a rather large scar on his face.
Not only was he like not a local and he fucking stiffed me and didn't pay.
Yeah.
But he had this really big scar on his face.
Yeah.
And the cops are like, okay, did he follow Marilyn? Like, what's the deal?
Yes.
And I'm thinking, oh my God. And it really is starting to hit me a lot in this episode that there is always an incredibly big chance that this is just a random act of violence.
Yeah.
Which is really scary to think about.
I know.
Because it's not like, oh, who was this guy? What was his connection to Mary Lynn? It's like, oh no, did
right.
he see this like woman who was upset and
yes.
follow her and take advantage of her in the fucking alleyway?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. Yes. So the bartender... Bless you.
Sorry.
See, you are a Buttons. That was the daintiest sneeze. We didn't even hear it.
You can't grow up with my dad. And oh, first of all, my dad is the loudest fucking sneezer on the planet,
oh,
as
so
all dads
Steve.
Are.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Why they do this, I don't know.
I know.
But he's
I
also
know.
A good, you know, he's yeah. not getting germs anywhere.
That's true.
Anyway.
Buttons. Better than Buttons.
No, I'm not cute.
You are so cute.
Oh, no, no, no. There are people who are super cute.
I'm more stuck on like what our rehearsals would be like for our ice skating. Like, what song are we doing? Probably The Greatest Love of All.
That's like a love song, though.
But it doesn't have to be to each other.
Are we doing like prom poses?
Well, we are now.
Okay.
I mean, maybe we could do something to like get the party started by Pink or something.
Okay.
Thunder and Buttons. Okay. Okay, great. I'll
Pink
see you on the
involved.
Ice in January.
Yeah, we yeah, can yeah. have a conversation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I just stepped one step forward.
Yeah, we're close.
One step closer.
It's not a party barge, but I'll take it.
Okay. Close enough.
Yes.
The bartender meets with a sketch artist. Now, Kenda, just a quick note. Kenda keeps talking about how the stress of the job made him smoke like crazy.
Yeah.
And in all of these reenactments, the actor playing him is constantly smoking and brooding and brooding and smoking.
Uh-huh.
And so he's behind the sketch artist's shoulder, like puffing away
uh-huh.
in the reenactment.
Uh-huh. As though Kenda, he doesn't have the time to go down to the impound lot and look in the truck windows to see the knife in the jacket, but
that's,
he's gonna stand
no.
there while the sketch is being made. I don't think so, Kenda.
Looking over his shoulder.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Let him work.
Exactly.
Let them cook. As
exactly.
They say. So Kenda also says that he's big. He says this as if he's the only person to ever do it. And I'm like, this should be standard. I'm
uh-huh.
glad he's doing it, but
yeah.
it got me frustrated.
Oh,
being
yeah.
like, this should be. He's like,
so when I have a lead meeting, we sit everybody down. Okay, what do you know? Now, what do you know? Tell everybody in the room. No one's lost. Everyone knows where the case stands. The process works very well. Because it's organized. Anybody could pick up the case and know what was happening. It's not one guy, it's all of us guys. It's a team.
He does this thing where he's like, I started having meetings with my guys and like sharing information. Like the guy that you're sitting next to, aren't I amazing?
And I'm like,
I know.
That should be standard.
I know.
But like, I want to say like, Joe Kenda, use your power for good.
Yeah.
People like love you and listen to you and you're revered. Why don't you say, I'm the fucking homicide hunter. I'm Joe goddamn Kenda. I've done this 1,000 times and there are only 30 cases I haven't solved and they keep me up at night. Here's how you should do. Here's how you become me, everybody.
The homicide hunter. What a fucking moniker.
Like.
The homicide hunter.
Joe,
I know.
Help us out.
Well,
you
they
can
make
really
this...
help us out, I think, Joe.
It's true. They get the sketch done. The bartender's like, yeah, that looks just like him. They share this thing all over town. People who knew Mary, people who didn't know her, nobody knows this guy.
Nobody knows anything. There's no information about Mary, no leads, no suspects. Like, who is this piece of
yeah.
shit?
Yeah.
So it's February 1989, 8 months later. The Colorado cops get a phone call from the Hutchinson Police Department in Kansas.
This scene was making me chuckle because one of the people arrested, a woman named Rachel Kep, thinks she has information in the Mary Lynn Viapondo case.
To which I say, okay, Rach, dazzle me.
But my thing is, I feel like as the cops are kicking down the door to the house they're robbing, she's like, I know who did it.
Yeah.
Like, she had this in her back pocket for months.
At first, yes. And then I'm like, but then I don't know. So
yeah.
here's her story.
Yeah.
She used to live in Colorado Springs, which is where this happened, with a guy named Mike Lauterman, who she was arrested with.
Yes.
In the summer of 1988, Mike Lauterman ran through.
I love how you say his name.
Lauterman?
Lauterman. I'm not
There's
giving you
a
shit.
U.
I know. I know. I
Latterman. Caffey.
Florida.
No, Caffey is how everyone else says it.
Oh yeah, coffee. Coffee.
Coffee.
I also coffee. Say crayons, like I color with crayons.
You can't do this.
I know, I don't know. Anyway, Mike Lauterman.
He ran through the alleyway.
When he reached the house, he was all out of breath and was doubled over. Totally out of sorts, distressed to the max, with scratches and marks on him. She stated she did ask him what was wrong. He made the following statements. I've done something really bad. I can't believe what I've done.
I've done something really bad. I can't believe what I've done. Rachel doesn't ask him. He doesn't elaborate. She
no.
has no more information.
But she's like, you know what I'm going to do? Stick that in my back pocket and go rob a house in Kansas City. You know what I mean?
With the guy.
With the guy.
Who did something horrible that he can't even talk about it. I'm not going
to
ask.
She thinks this is her get out of jail free card. I looked her up to see if she like served any prison time. I couldn't find anything about her.
Okay.
But I'm like, Rachel, did it work for you, girl?
I don't know.
You know what I mean?
I guess not. I guess it did. If you don't have any information on her, there's no other record.
I guess. Well, two detectives get the car and drive to Kansas. I'm like, were planes not an option? Like, they're going to drive 7 hours
from... Might just be easier to like get, I don't know.
But once again, like being in the car with like somebody for 7 hours each way.
Yeah. Hell of a playlist.
I know.
Now we get the most famous Kendaism there is.
Yeah.
Well, my. Now, where'd you get that, Mikey? Where'd you get that?
Where'd you get that, Mikey? Where'd you get that? But my is the big one. My.
Because Keith says that, too.
Yeah.
I wonder if he stole it from Kenda.
I don't think. We don't have to pit these two.
You know what? You're right. Why are we doing that? They're going to end up doing their own Lilith Fair.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're different lanes. Apples and oranges.
100%.
So they ask him that very question. Where did you get that scar? We have the story. What did you do in the alley? Where's the scar from? What's going on?
And he said, oh, 3 weeks ago, I was shoplifting from Kmart and ran from the security guard and we got in a tussle and that's how I got this scar on my face. We need to look into this further.
3 weeks ago, he was shoplifting from a Kmart and got into a tussle with a security guard. These people
one
are
thing led
living
to another. You know how it
hard.
Goes. You know how it goes.
Stealing from a Kmart. God.
So then he's like, oh, and another thing. This guy just keeps talking. He puts himself a block away from the crime scene. He's like, and then after that, I was staying at a motel a block away from where Mary Lynn was raped and murdered. But that's it. He's not involved.
But, well, they're like, well, you know what we're going to do? Take your DNA. He voluntarily provides his DNA. As soon as they do that, I'm like, they didn't do it.
It's time to find furniture that feels like the one. Shop Haverty's Memorial Day sale and save on furniture backed by a regret-free guarantee. Plus, explore fresh styles arriving just in time for summer. Visit Haverty's online or in-store in Columbus at Polaris.
They take his DNA, it's not him.
And I'm like, wait, so what did this guy do? That he ran into Rachel's house out of breath. Whatever, they're all clear.
I think Rachel made that story up.
Whatever.
If I'm being honest.
So the Kmart story is true, whatever.
I know.
They're at a total dead end. Kenda's sucking down cigarettes like his life depends on it. Case goes cold. It is now inactive. And like, I can't even imagine the family. Days, weeks, months, years.
Yeah. I mean, especially because it was like on the cutting edge of DNA technology. Like, they should have been able to find the guy, but there were
but
no databases.
Know.
You know, like that's really the big stumbling block here.
So Cynthia, the sister, says,
as the years were going by, I felt that there was a dark cloud over my head. I tried to keep the story alive so that people would not forget my little sister, Mary Lynn, and the horrible death she suffered.
Like always, the family takes it on. It's up to the family to keep the story alive, to get some kind of like closure or truth or justice or whatever, or just something.
Yeah.
Joe Kenda feels awful. He's like, this is my fault. Everyone is suffering. I can't solve the thing. I'm supposed to solve the thing and I can't do it. And now everyone is suffering because of me. And also on top of that, Bob, the poor husband, is now a suspect in some people's mind because there is no suspect. And they're like, oh, the husband must have. So this guy's life is ruined in two different ways.
Yeah.
Because now like everyone thinks he did it.
But I'm like, don't people read the papers?
It's
like the
nightmare.
Cops cleared this guy.
People don't care.
I guess.
Like he's just it now. Like who else could it be? They wonder. So this is when Joe Kenda, and I'm like, Joe, he goes, many times victims are participants in their own demise by living a high-risk lifestyle, but that's not the case with Mary Lynn. She's an innocent victim, Joe.
I know.
Joseph.
I know.
This was made in 2023.
Yeah.
Like, how very dare you?
I told you before we started, like, there's some stuff that he says I don't like.
How very dare you?
You know what I mean?
You should know better,
don't
right?
call her honey. Don't blame the victim for being murdered.
But, like, to say, like, high-risk lifestyle. And
I know. It's such an old-school way of thinking. It's like, that used to be acceptable to say out loud.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Was innocent.
Yeah.
As opposed to what?
Right.
Sir.
Sex worker. You know what I mean? Like we've seen this 100 times.
So this is when Dan May, the DA who was like really, really affected by it, is like visiting the scene 30 years later and walking us through it again.
And the crime scene hasn't changed at all.
So September 1st, 1996, this is 8 years after the rape and murder of Mary Lynn Villalpando. Joe Kenda retires.
I'm like, Joe, you're like, it's 2023. You retired in 1996. Were you 20? Like, you, like, he could still be working today.
Yeah.
You know?
And he leaves behind 31 unsolved homicides, including this one. He knows every detail of every unsolved case. And he's always thinking about them because he's like, all I want is to be able, he goes, all I want is to be able to point a gun at somebody and tell them they're under arrest. And he wants it for the families.
Well, and so then we jump to 2017 where we meet the new guys. They establish a cold case squad.
James and Joe.
I love that Jim is the calm one. Joe describes himself as unmitigated anxiety disaster.
Chaotic anxiety disaster.
Talk about Thunder and Buttons.
That always wanted to be doing something, says Joe.
Thunder and Buttons, right? Those are the real Thunder 100%. And Buttons. But it seems like Joe Kenda is still really involved. It seems like he doesn't work there anymore, but it feels like he's at the station every day.
Hovering.
Yeah,
smoking.
Smoking
and brooding and hovering.
Exactly.
And so the DNA kept this case alive. And everyone in the case believed in DNA. Even back then, like, they knew it would help cases. So keeping the DNA the way they did was monumental. And Jim says that was the key to blowing this whole thing wide open.
Yeah. And so by 2017, they say DNA had come leaps and bounds.
If you had been charged with a felony and went to, say, a local jail, your DNA was collected. It was submitted into CODIS.
Every night at midnight, the CODIS system goes through all the unknown, unmatched profiles and bounces it off all the profiles that are already in CODIS.
Every night at midnight, the CODIS system
at the stroke
of midnight goes through all of their cases and tries to match them. So anything new that's been uploaded within the last 24 hours at midnight tries to get matched to all of the CODIS cases all over the country.
I watched that 10 times.
Yeah.
I was like, are they saying to me that there's a possibility for an answer every single day?
Right.
Is that what that means?
Yeah.
Because that will, like, help me get up in the morning.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, if that's really, that's what they're saying,
but
right?
But doesn't it also just seem like coding? You know what I mean? Like, shouldn't that just be so easy to do? Like, you know what I mean? Like,
but that it scans everyone that's been uploaded all around the country.
Yeah.
And every single day there's a, at any time of day, there's a possibility that there's a match being entered. Like, is that's what they're saying, right?
I think so. That, like, at midnight, it's like anything that's been uploaded today gets matched to anything that was already there.
So every day.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
But they're also saying that, like, it's amazing that that happens, but there's still, like, so the killer's DNA is in CODIS, and every day they try to make a match, and every day there isn't one. So where is this
guy?
And
it's like, so it's been 30 years and nothing? Like, this asshole hasn't been arrested since he did this evil and awful thing? Like, how?
And they're saying, like, well, maybe he's dead, maybe he's out of the country. Joe kind of was like, maybe he moved to France.
Yeah, no, we're not that lucky, Joe.
No.
So June 6th, 2017... Jim and Joe are sick of waiting.
Well, and there's a new DNA technology called phenotyping. And I remember when this came out.
So there were laboratories out there that were looking at portions of DNA which could give an indication to physical attributes of individuals. The eye color, hair color, and sometimes even whether or not they have freckles.
It's using DNA to actually get a literal picture of what the person likely looked like.
There's no reason not to try this. They have to move forward with this. Like, they have to use this if it's at their disposal. By October 2017, the results come back. White male, duh.
I mean, when you see the picture at first, you're like, that's just what every white guy looks like.
And remember, it's not a sketch. It's like a facial rendering.
Yeah, exactly.
So, like, bleached hair and blue eyes. And I'm like, the only thing new is that there's blue eyes.
But I will say, when we get the guy, it's like, it could be a photograph of him.
It.
Yeah, yeah.
So they send it off to the news stations, the internet, it's everywhere, and crickets. No leads, not a single call, nothing. The only good news is that there's attention to the case again. But in terms of, like, moving forward, everyone thought, like, this has got to be something, right?
Yeah.
No.
Which is wild, because when we find the guy, he's lived in town the entire time.
This is also where we see a news clip that says that this is the first case in Colorado where they collected DNA.
Yeah.
That is really interesting. And they failed to tell us that.
They said it early on. I noticed it the second time.
I was like,
Joe kind of says it. He's like, this was the first time we were, he's like, that was when he called it the DNA, like the science-y mumbo jumbo. It was the first time we were using it. So we'll give it a try.
I guess, but he kind of made it seem like that was the first time, like, his department was using it. That this was the first case.
In Colorado.
Like, that's a big deal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So November 30th, 2017.
I remember getting a message from a CBI coordinator at CODIS saying they had a match in the case. The sample had been entered maybe around midnight, 4 a.m. She said she had a match in this case. I remember hanging up the phone, just being elated.
It turns out the DNA is that of a 45-year-old Caucasian male whose name is James Edward Babel.
CODIS finds a match. It's uploaded into the system at 4 in the morning.
Yeah, the guy's name is James Edward Papel. Is that how you say it?
Papel. We see his mugshot first. It is like I'm seeing the DNA rendering.
It is unbelievable. Because when I first saw the DNA rendering, I'm like, that's just a generic white guy. It looks just like him.
Shocking that a generic white guy did
this. Yeah.
The numbers don't lie.
Yeah.
No one's ever heard of this guy. He's not in any statement. He's not on a single piece of paper. They're like, where did he come from?
Meaning they've never heard of him in the case file.
Yeah.
Like, he was never mentioned in all of the years. Nobody ever talked about this guy as a possible suspect. But they basically do a search of this guy. They get his date of birth, 1972. He was 15 years old when he raped and brutally murdered Mary Lynn.
I was like,
15.
I was like, is this going to be another twist that it was a mistake in CODIS or something? I was like, 15?
15 years old.
Meanwhile, because there's so much attention on the case, Amanda Anderson reaches out to the cold case unit and she's here to tell us what she told them. She's this guy's very first girlfriend. She met him when they were teenagers in like 1989, right? After he raped and murdered Mary Lynn.
And they were living in a group home together. And she says, like, he was just incredibly violent, incredibly abusive to her. She describes him as just having this, like, dark rage in him.
He was hyper-focused on women, she said.
Yep. And, like, he would slap her. He would punch her. He said one time he hit her over her head with a heavy army bag full of clothes that collapsed her neck into her shoulders.
Those things are gigantic. My mom has one that her father used in the war. So it was, like, super durable.
They're like sandbags.
It's huge.
Yeah.
And if it was filled up and that canvas is so thick because it needed to survive the elements or whatever, this is not like your gym bag.
No, exactly.
It's huge. And when there's nothing in it, it's heavy.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So Amanda was super, super scared of James.
I was extremely scared of James. I knew that at one point I would end up dead if I didn't get out of it.
She said he was very capable of, you know, killing someone.
That would be the only thing that would maybe satisfy his rage, kill somebody.
She tells him, too, that, like, he was very capable of killing somebody. She says maybe that would be the only thing that would satisfy his rage.
So the cops look into him. He's a local guy. He's
so
in the community.
That's the thing. When they're circulating his picture, and, like, he's been living there since 1988. He never left.
He has kids.
Yes.
He's been married twice. Twice. And all of the women in his life are like, oh, that violent, abusive asshole. Like, yeah, I know him. He's definitely capable of
murder. And we see, like, some of the police reports, kicking, punching, strangling, choking. Like, he's been beating on women his entire life.
And at one point he said to them, I've killed better than you.
Oh, my God.
Are you crazy?
I know.
And it's like, oh, we have all this documentation. What are these pieces of paper supposed to do exactly? That's what the women filed them, right?
Yes.
All the documentation's here, and we're only looking at it 30 years later. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because every time he goes to trial, he, like, claims the insanity defense. In 2006, he had 6 different felonies all at the same time. He was found not guilty of them by reason of insanity, and he goes to the state mental hospital in Pueblo. And we're back with Stephanie, the DA, who's like, I'm no health expert, but I'm calling bullshit.
I can't diagnose him because
exactly.
He's not my patient. I hate when they say that, but I get it.
She just doesn't buy it. She's like,
but he's very good at working the system and manipulating people. James Papel was an outpatient at CMHIP, the Colorado Mental Health Institute of Pueblo. And he was living with a nurse that worked at CMHIP, just evidencing his ability to manipulate.
He's living with one of the facility's nurses.
Not as part of his treatment.
No.
But, like, romantically.
And, like, as a couple.
So he's in the custody of the hospital, but he's not living there.
Yes.
And then he's also living with a nurse that worked there, but not officially. They're just shacking up.
Yes.
This guy can manipulate any situation that he's in.
He knows exactly what he's doing. So they go to see this guy. He's super nervous.
What's this all about?
He's asking 5,000 questions in the hallway. They're like, let's go to a room.
And when they're like, oh, you want to know what we're here about? We're here about a homicide. It's a cold case. His face drops.
They slide over a picture of Mary Lynn, and he just, like, stone cold.
So they read him his rights. He goes, he doesn't want to talk. They go, okay, fine. So, however.
But he does want to ask a lot of questions.
They have a court order for his DNA.
Yes.
And he said the magic word, I don't want to talk. And they're like, okay, we won't say a word. We do have to take your DNA. As they're taking his DNA, he's like, well, he's asking all these questions. And they're like, well, sorry, buddy, you asked for a lawyer. We actually shouldn't even. I'm already saying
tell you
too
anything.
Much.
Yes.
I really can't answer your questions. And he's like, yeah, but I'm curious and kind of scared. And they're like, well, and as they're walking out, he's like, will I ever see you again? And
literally,
the cops are like, oh, yeah, you can bet on it,
we
buddy.
We promise. We'll be back.
So they send the DNA off to see if it's a hit for the second time. And I'm like, did CODIS already tell us?
I know. It takes another 3 fucking weeks. And now they're saying that, like, while they're waiting, they're trying to track down people he knew. They're looking for somebody that he confessed to.
Right.
And they find his mom and they go talk to her. Apparently, she's like a cat lady.
They had a long chat on the porch. Joe says, not Kenda, Joseph, the former detective. Yeah, we were in the presence of numerous cats that hung out in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
Reading right from his report. There were numerous felines in the vicinity of the area that I saw with my ocular eyeballs.
Yeah.
Here's what she tells them.
So James Papel told his mother that if they found DNA on the body, then it's because I stole some jewelry from her. But she was already dead when I came across her in the alley.
He says, you know, I took her jewelry, but I didn't sexually assault her. I didn't murder her. So they must have got it from that. But that's not where we found the DNA.
So my DNA is definitely going to come back. But I didn't rape or kill anybody. But she was already dead and I stole the jewelry.
Cut to Stephanie, who's like, yeah, we have your sperm, asshole.
What this piece of shit doesn't know is that DNA isn't like his hair,
right.
Just his hair. It's his sperm.
Or like he thinks it's fingerprints or whatever.
He can't talk his way out of this one. There's no way.
Yeah.
And to the surprise of no one, this guy's a match for the second time and he's the fucking killer.
Yeah. The match, by the way, the likelihood is 78 octillion percent that it's him.
What even is that?
78 octillion to
like 800 million zeros at the end.
Yeah.
So in his mugshot,
the DNA has never been more sure of anything.
Honestly.
You know?
Good. And they're like, that hair is doing him no favors.
Exactly.
In his mugshot, you see this shamrock tattoo with the word lucky. It's a horrible tattoo.
It's
it doesn't
awful.
Have to be, but whoever did this is a terrible tattoo artist.
Yeah.
But Kenda goes,
well, he's been lucky up to now, but he needs to add 2 letters to his tattoo, the letter U and the letter N.
U? And N.
I almost texted that to you this morning.
And he kind of chuckles. And I'm like,
know.
Good one.
Good one, Kenda. Good one.
So, but this means he was really 15 years old.
Yes.
There's no glitch. There's no accident. There's no typo. He was 15 when he did this.
I know.
And how did he avoid getting caught for 30 years?
I mean,
he was just beating women and allowed to get married twice and have kids and all this shit.
The whole reason he never got caught was because his DNA was never entered into the system. So whatever he did, like, he didn't get, or he was getting off by reason of insanity, so they were never taking his DNA. Like, it
the system is a problem.
Wild to think. And did he kill other people?
That we have so,
you know?
I would bet that he probably did.
He must have.
And he was very close to doing it again, at the very, very least. But there are so many, the reason the system sucks is because there are so many, they're going through pages and pages and pages of paperwork and all of these women who are like, he was a violent asshole who was going to kill me.
Yeah.
And yet,
yes,
he's shacking up with the nurse and he's just like out in the world.
I know.
Decades.
I know.
It's crazy.
It's terrifying.
So he's charged with murder in the first degree. He's being tried as an adult.
Yes.
And so this guy tries to do the insanity plea again. And the DA is like, bring it on. He goes, oh, I'm going to get that son of a bitch.
Which is so funny because they go to trial and like during jury selection, there was a COVID exposure. So they declare mistrial. And while they're like recasting the jury, he's like, you know what? Never mind. I'm just going to go ahead and take that plea deal.
Yeah. And his statement, though, is that he stabbed her and robbed her. Has no emotion, no remorse at all. We know he's lying.
They look at his statement because the family, of course, wants any information they can possibly get, and he gives them nothing.
Yeah. And so Bob, you know, Cynthia calls him a coward, Cynthia, Mary Lynn's sister.
Yeah.
Bob, to this day,
I can't say for certain why I didn't jump over and try to bring his neck and kill him right there, but it's what I wanted to do. It's what my mind was doing. I've killed him too many times in my mind before I even had a picture and a face and a person.
I've killed him too many times in my mind before I even knew his face.
Yeah.
So the theory on what happened, the cops have their theory because this guy lied, even though we had him dead to rights.
Exactly.
But he lied.
Yeah.
So the theory is that Mary Lynn took a walk to cool off, which was not uncommon for her.
Yeah.
She did it a million times. Why would she be scared to do it?
Yeah.
It was late. The killer noticed what they describe as an emotionally compromised woman, like walking alone late at night.
In like a dark back alley that's where nobody is, you know?
So, yeah, it was both a random act of violence and a crime of opportunity.
Exactly.
And so he attacks her and she fights back. And in the middle of the fight, they are saying that that's when she probably fell and hit her head on that rock.
I was like, that's what we're going with?
That's what I guess what they're...
You know, like that he didn't do that to her.
Trauma,
right.
You know?
Yeah. And then, you know, over the course of the fight, he stabs her in the chest, pulls her clothes off, sexually assaults her, poses her body for the police.
And leaves her there. He's 15. He's 15 years old.
I know.
And this is what Joe Kenda goes, look, this guy is what he is. He's a monster. He's evil. And he goes, was it because his mom abandoned him? I don't know. I don't care.
I'm like, we're doing that again?
But no, we're not. Because he goes,
what do we do with him now? Continue with an academic discussion on how he got that way? Or wrap him in barbed wire and put him in a dungeon? I prefer the barbed wire and the dungeon.
I prefer the barbed wire
in the dungeon.
And I'm like, Joe, when you put it that way,
I know.
Barbed wire all the way.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
100%.
So it's 2021, 32 years and 11 months to the date, and he's sentenced to 60 years. And the judge hates him, too.
The judge says straight up, I would have sentenced that 15-year-old boy the exact same way.
Yeah.
And the judge was a woman, by the way.
Right. So Bob, the husband, hates the killer forever, obviously.
Yeah.
And he's like, I blame like whoever like made this guy this way. Like,
and like the family never has any closure. They feel better knowing this guy's off the streets or whatever. But like, no, of course, there's never any closure for the families who suffer through something like this.
Yeah. And it ends with Joe Kenda sending a message out to everyone who has so far gotten away with murder, because Joe Kenda's not done with you.
He's not. I mean, he's retired, but he's not done.
He goes to those people.
And to those people, I wish them the fondest and the cruelest of deaths. They certainly deserve it.
They certainly deserve it. All right, Joe, you got me. That barbed wire thing had me.
That's pretty good.
He's right. When you think about it that way, what are we going to talk
about
it and look in our little notebooks? Or are we going to put them in the barbed wire in the dungeon?
Roll the barbed wire.
Barbed wire in the dungeon.
Oh my God, girl, we did Man Without a Face?
The Man With No Face, this is, and then like in parentheses, it's like Joe Kenda Homicide Hunter. So there are a few more of these. They're definitely going to go on the calendar.
Oh, so fun.
Yeah.
Fam, don't forget to join the Discord. Don't forget to, oh my God, follow us on YouTube.
Yeah.
And go check us out. We're almost at 200,000 subscribers.
That's insane.
Which is just insane.
Thank you all so much.
What are we doing next?
So next up, we're doing The Trouble in Bardstown. This is one of those 90-minute Datelines that just came out.
Oh.
Season 34, episode 7. This is the Crystal Rogers case.
Oh.
So people have been wanting us to cover this for a very, very long time. There's like a 6-episode, very like soap opera-y Oxygen series from like 2018 that we haven't done, but there's now a full-length doc basically because it's a 90-minute thing and it just came out. And so we're going to do this instead.
Amazing.
At the request of many of our lovely listeners.
All right, well, stay tuned for the trailer for that, fam, and we will see you soon.
Bye. We love you.
Bye.
Stay safe, please. Bye.
You know, people go missing every single day, but a mother who's in constant contact with her kids, that was getting everyone's attention.
This is a mystery of where is Crystal Rogers?
We want to know why and how the car ends up on the Bluegrass Parkway.
Mom would have never left her car just on the side of the road.
One of the rear tires is flat, and we felt like that the positioning of the seat was not proper for where she would have had it.
What do you think happened?
I'm shocked. I do not know. I want the answer to it.
We come out every day hoping we'll find something.
Crystal's dad, Tommy, kind of started his own armchair investigation.
Very early. Yeah.
People were talking to Tommy, and people were getting nervous.
I'm not stopping until I find her.
What if you could get more from what you already do? As a Shell Fuel Rewards member, that's just a regular Monday afternoon. You get more rewards, more savings, and more special offers. Earn rewards when shopping, dining out, and fueling up. And all of that becomes fuel savings when you're at the pump. Use the Shell app and enjoy life with more. Your nearest Shell station is less than 5 miles away.
Lots of places can expose you to identity theft. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. If we find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, we alert you right away, all through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Save up to 30% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Hear that? That's the sound of your skin silently crying out for hydration. Luckily, Dr. Teals has just the thing to get you glowing in no time. Meet Dr. Teals Skin Renewal Deep Hydration, made with a proprietary triple magnesium complex plus skincare actives for 50% improved skin hydration after just one bath. The words dry and dehydrated are about to be wiped from your vocabulary. Find Dr. Teals, all dressed in blue, in your local bath aisle. Dr. Teals. Yep, you needed that.